KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Coming to someone with genuine concern and genuine love, just because, you know, you're a human, I'm a human, and I really do want to make sure that you can be the best version of yourself, I think people can pick that up. And then once you pick that up and I give you advice and things like that, and I also work with them, allowing them to also be an active participant in their care, it really helps.
And our guest this week is Dr. Shamika Bin. She is the new head team physician for Temple University Athletics. Just got hired in January. And Dr. Bins, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel honored.
So let's start with the new position. As we are recording this end of January, we were talking earlier off the air. You said about 3 weeks you've been in place. What's the transition been like to life at Temple?
Well, Temple is a huge institution. And so with that comes a lot of responsibility and a lot of new faces and names, which I'm really trying hard to remember everyone's names, because, you know, when it comes to sports medicine or anything that has to do with medicine, relationships are really important. But so far, I really have been loving the experience thus far. Of course, there is a learning curve because every institution has their own workflow. So just kind of working through that.
You will work with every athletic program at Temple? Is that how
Correct.
It works?
Yeah. So basically how it works is that I take care of all of the athletes at Temple University. In addition to the athletes, I also work in student health. So even your weekend warriors, student athletes who do club sports, or even if you don't do a club sport, but you're in the gym and you tweak something in the gym, right? So that's all a part of that position. In addition, I do have family medicine sessions where I see people in the community a couple of times a week.
A lot of people, I think, are familiar with like training staffs for teams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For people who aren't familiar, give us context. How do you fit in with, say, a team's athletic trainer? Where does the athletic trainer's responsibilities end and your begin? Is there overlap? How does that work?
Yeah. So my job is basically I supervise the athletic trainers and I give them advice on if someone has any sort of medical issues that have to do with the athlete. For example, a student athlete or any person who has type 1 diabetes and they are competing at a high level, you know, Temple University is a Division I school. So how being able to manage the athlete's recovery with also on their medical side, okay? Typically, when it comes to athletic trainers, they have a lot of education in musculoskeletal stuff. So that's great. So usually if an athlete, you know, sprains an ankle, those sorts of things, right? They can handle all of that. But there comes a point where they're just like, you know what? I've kind of run out of everything in my toolkit. Let me go ahead and see what Dr. Bin's, what Dr. Bin's thoughts are on this particular injury, and that's kind of where I take over. And usually it's a little bit more of the complicated cases, not just your kind of bread and butter cases. Additionally, in order for any athlete to compete, we need to make sure that the athlete is healthy enough to compete. So I do things just to make sure that they're okay, doing vision screens, making sure that their heart is normal. I ask about family history, those sorts of things. A lot of the times when it comes to student athletes or just students in general, the population from about 17 to about 25, they really don't have a primary care doctor. And so that's the role that I step in, is I'm their primary care doctor, making sure that they're still getting their vaccines if they need to get vaccines or whatever issues that might arise, right? And then also making sure that, God forbid, if one of our players ends up getting like the flu or get sick during the middle of the season, how do you manage that? I need to be able to, one, decrease the spread of whatever that infection is to the other teammates. And then number two, being able to get that athlete to his or her best position as quickly as possible so that they can go ahead and play. Because that's really what it's all about, right? Making sure that they can play and just only really worrying about the game, the points that's on the board, and nothing else.
Now, prior to Temple, you were the head team physician at Drexel, and prior to that, Chestnut Hill, am I correct?
So I was head team physician for Chestnut Hill, and I was associate team physician at Drexel University.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So once again, to give people context, kind of give us an idea of, I am sure there is no average day with this. But
yeah,
especially, and I know you've only been there a few weeks, but Temple, so many programs,
mm-hmm,
so many athletes.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, when you go in at the start of the day. Is your calendar blocked off, or is it relatively open with the idea that by lunch you're going to have a list of 13 things you have to do?
Lunch, hopefully I get it. And any physician who, anyone who works in medicine, they know that lunch is kind of a luxury to have. But that's my goal, to strive so that I can have lunch. I have a broad schedule. And based off of that, I have, for example, Temple has a lot of different athletic facilities. And so I go to the different athletic facilities, whether I'm in the football training room or Olympic sports training room, or where they have field hockey. So they have different training rooms. And those training rooms, the athletic trainers are there to kind of help with any sort of injuries, anything like that. However, it's also kind of, think about it as like a mini doctor's office. And so I have hours at certain training rooms across campus where anyone could come in at any point in time. They try to do a really good job, the athletic trainers. Shout out to the Temple University athletic trainers. They do a really good job of kind of just scheduling them for me. So I kind of, as soon as I walk in, I know I'm going to see 15 athletes within these next 3 hours or what have you. So I kind of split it up between those athletic training rooms, and then I go and see the club sports, the other students who aren't necessarily on any of these, on these teams, and I also see them in the afternoons, a couple days out of the week as well. And then I switch to on my family medicine side, where I'm seeing babies, I'm seeing the elderly, I'm dealing with people who have heart failure and diabetes and high blood pressure from basically all walks of life. So it's kind of like a mix between all of those. And then you want to sprinkle in where you have games. So games happen on the weekends and nights. So basically, especially during, we're in basketball season right now, I have no nights and weekends because that's when we're competing. So I have to be there to be at the game. And you're just there just making sure that everyone is okay. And God forbid, if you need someone, then I'm right there and I'm able to assist when needed. For example, there was an incident, one of the other basketball games that I was covering. And then we had three girls that went up and I had to evaluate one girl for a concussion. Another girl had stitches on her nose. Another girl had this. And, you know, just trying to, again, evaluate them as quickly as possible, seeing, okay, are you okay for you to go back into the game, or do you need to sit this one out? And then kind of give the athletic trainer the instructions or like whatever the management is, so that when they go back to their home school, their team doctor can take that care and just continue that.
Yeah, that was kind of my next question. Specifically with games, do you travel, or is kind of the idea that the home institution provides their team physician, kind of runs the show while you're there?
Okay, so I do travel for football. I do travel if, for example, we get into the postseason. So women's basketball, if we get to the, I'm not going to say if, when we get to the AC season and hopefully the NCAAs, I'll be traveling with them to those events. But when it comes to like the home events, I take care of everyone that's in the audience. Whoever's in that building, it is my responsibility. I can tell you that when I was in fellowship, I did my fellowship at Rutgers University, and I remember that for one of our first few football games, I saw so many people, but none of them were any of the athletes on either side of the team. We had a mascot that was injured. We had someone that fell off of a horse. We had someone in the stands who passed out, and we had to address. We had one of the referees who messed up their knee, and we had to evaluate. So really, your responsibility is everyone who was in that vicinity, it's on you. So you have to be able to have not only good medical knowledge based off of musculoskeletal issues, right? But you really have to know the medicine. And that's where I think a lot of the times when you have head team physicians for different schools, or even, you know, at the professional level, NBA, et cetera, they're usually going to have someone who does primary care and sports so that they can be able to do, you get a twofer.
Was this always a goal for you in medicine? Like, did you get into medicine as an occupation with the idea that, not that you wanted to be the team physician at Temple, but that you wanted to get into the world of sports? Or was this just something once you kind of became established and you got exposed to it, you thought, okay, that is a direction I'd love to go?
I will tell you that the reason why I got into medicine in the first place was I didn't know anything about sports medicine at all. I can tell you that I learned about this field when I was about in my third year of medical school. That's kind of when I found out about this opportunity. But initially, I went into medicine because I wanted to be, believe it or not, a psychiatrist. I wanted to be a psychiatrist because growing up in New York City, in an area where you have like a lot of immigrants, I'm a first generation American. My parents come from the Caribbean. And just kind of seeing when I was younger how the effects of mental health just affected everyone, right? And I remember I told my mom, I was like, well, mom, I was like, I want to do something. I remember I was watching there was a movie called, I forget the name of the movie, but the movie had to do with Denzel Washington, and it was with Angelina Jolie. I think it was called like Bones or something like that. And the lady had to like saw off the guy's hands to get the fingerprints. And I remember that, and it was like a psychological thriller. And her job was she was a psychologist or psychiatrist, one of them, and she was working with the CIA to kind of figure out what's kind of going on. So I really liked the idea of understanding the person's psyche and their mind and being able to use that for good. So when I told my mom that I wanted to do that, she laughed at me because most people at that point in time thought that psychology, psychiatry was like a whole bunch of nonsense. So she said, well, if you want people to actually listen when you speak, you need to have a degree behind your name that people will respect. And so she said, well, you might want to think about becoming a doctor, because if you're just doing a regular psychologist, he's like, none. He's like, if you want to help our community, they're not going to listen to you, so become a doctor. So I did that. Again, I went to medical school thinking that I was going to become a psychologist. I got all these like awards for psychology and things like that. I had internships. And then when I was in medical school, I actually did my first inpatient psychiatry rotation, and it was exhausting. Just being so like emotionally like involved, you know, just hearing the stories. And I was duped by a schizophrenic. They have these delusions that they truly believe in, that because of their illness, they truly believe in it. So it wasn't until I got the family members in and we were evaluating the patient with the family that I realized that everything that this person told me was a lie. And that kind of really made me sad, and kind of just, I didn't really feel like it didn't really give me too much hope. And so with that, in addition to, you know, feeling just like emotionally and physically drained, I kind of realized that, yes, I might have had this idea of becoming a psychiatrist, but I didn't really have too much joy in doing that. So I was like, well, what can I do that would allow me to be able to have some of that, but to be able to, you know, treat people in different ways? And throughout my collegiate years, high school, college, you know, I've always been very much interested in sports. When I was in medical school, I even trained a lot of my colleagues, you know, trying to get them better while also studying. I used to be a strength coach, those sorts of things, worked with Little League, baseball, things like that. So sports has always been in tandem with my journey to becoming a physician. And so when I got to my third year of medical school, at that point you go through different rotations. So you kind of see what you like. So you go through neurology, orthopedics, family, and it kind of gives you just a flavor of, yes, you're going to be a doctor. You need to know all of these things, but you experience all these things to kind of figure out which one do you like the best, right? And so when I did OB and I did ortho and I did all these things, I was like, wow, I love all of these things. And because I loved all of these things, I was like, well, what should I actually do? Make a long story short, I actually was debating. I knew that I wanted to do sports medicine. I found out about it when I was doing my orthopedic rotation, and I loved, loved, loved orthopedics. And so I was really debating, should I do the orthopedic route or should I do the family medicine route? And because I was so indecisive, I actually had a meeting with my family. Imagine a room of about 55 people, and I'm literally going through the pros and cons for each one. And at the end, my mom says, well, you know, you always seemed very much interested and you loved like the whole team aspect, being on the sidelines, traveling with teams. She goes, do you think you're going to have privileges to do all these surgeries for all these athletes, you know, if you're going to be a sports medicine doc? And basically what privileges means, it means that a doctor can be able to go to, you have to have a certain level of credentials. You have to go through a whole process for a surgeon to be able to do surgery at a particular hospital. So that's what it means by privileges. So she says, you know, do you think you're going to have privileges at all these hospitals across the country for you to be able to do these procedures for all these athletes? And I thought about it. I was like, well, no. So she said, well, she was also in the medical field. She said, you know, one of my good friends is an orthopedic doctor and, you know, they always complain about their back. Are you sure that you want to do that? And I was like, I think I probably want to go to family medicine, because doing the orthopedic route to do sports medicine, I would really just be focusing on musculoskeletal stuff. So, you know, again, shoulders, like bone and joint sort of things, not too much of the medicine. And I would be kind of limiting myself to the population. And because, again, I still loved a lot of peds, I loved OB, I loved all these things. Family medicine was kind of like the natural way for me to be able to get that. So I did my family medicine residency, and the first day I got there, I said, hey, I want to be a sports medicine doc. I made that known very the first day that I was there. And ever since then, again, ever since that meeting, there was no turning back.
Now, when you were in undergrad, you ran track and field, correct?
I didn't run. I was actually a thrower.
A thrower? Okay.
Yeah. So I threw shot put, discus, javelin for like the first 2 years, but my best events were shot and disc, but I also did hammer, and weight was also a really good event of mine.
Having that background as an athlete, as a collegiate athlete, how does that help you in your current job? I would imagine there's a connection there where you understand where athletes are coming from, and maybe if they have problems verbalizing what they're feeling or why they're seeing you, you maybe can go a little deeper than somebody that doesn't maybe have the background of being a high-level college athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my experience being a collegiate athlete, again, and understanding, you know, how much your identity is tied into your sport, right? So I did dance, I did track, I also did rugby. So when I can tell you, for example, I ended up getting a concussion while I was competing in rugby, and when I couldn't play, it was very unnerving, you know, because you're so used to kind of being with your teammates. You're used to this sort of structure, and, you know, you're known as like, oh, yeah, this is Shamika and she plays rugby and this is her position, et cetera, et cetera. And when you no longer have those associations to your name, you kind of go through this experience like, man, you know, am I really me? You know, so and even the same thing happened when I graduated college and I was no longer able to do track. That was a huge thing for me. Further, with me having the concussion, I understood, right? Because your brain's important. But when it comes to you graduating a school and you're no longer doing your sport that you love, that you've been playing since what, like tween years, it's like, who are you now? Right. And so I think that me having that experience as a former athlete, I know the trials and tribulations that they go through. I understand what it's like, you know, again, that whole like identity being like all tied up into who you are, you being the student, but you also being the athlete, and how your identity is tied up into that. I also understand, you know, you have to be a certain kind of crazy to be an athlete, if I'm being honest. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to medicine, because as an athlete, especially a student athlete, you're doing two-a-days. You're working out for hours, right? And if you're playing basketball, you're putting in all these hours of work to play what maybe like 15 minutes if you're coming off the bench, or maybe you're playing the entire game, right? Like a lot of energy and effort is put into one moment, right? Same thing with medicine. Like anyone in their right mind, with the amount of studying that it takes for you to get to be a doctor, it's insane. You know, anyone can study for 2 hours, but can you sit down and study for 17 hours? Can you study for 10 hours and retain and take a test that's going to last for 8 hours? No one does that, right? So I think that my experience as a collegiate athlete, it really does allow me to understand where they're coming from a deeper level. And it allows me to like engage with them in a way that is not as intimidating for them.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Dr. Shamika Binns on One-on-One in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Shamika Binns, head team physician for Temple University Athletics.
When it comes to connecting, you know, and having that background, but specifically at Temple, and once again, you've been there 10 minutes, like, so, you know, we're early on here, but how important and how difficult is it with so many, you're talking hundreds of student athletes at Temple, developing relationships where they feel comfortable with you? Now, I mean, you were the physician, so they go to you. Like, it's not like they're searching for a primary care doctor, but still, there needs to be a comfort level. How difficult is it with so many people to cultivate that? And are there things you try to do to try to accelerate that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to that, you know, it's all about relationships in sports, but even in medicine, just like seeing a regular, you know, patient in the office, relationships are important. I think that my experience, I've traveled a lot of different places across the country and across the globe, and that has allowed me to see different cultures and understanding different cultures and just kind of having like a few tidbits about different cultures, how they operate. That allows me to kind of it just kind of drives the conversation in a way that's natural for that patient. For example, if I know that an athlete is Muslim, right? And where, you know, next month is going to be Ramadan. So, you know, I asked those questions, you know, with Ramadan, you cannot eat or drink anything while the sun is out. You know, so kind of asking those questions, how are you, you know, while you're on this fast, how are you feeling in terms of energy wise, right? And a lot of people, they get surprised, like, wait, what, you know about Ramadan? Or, you know, just talking to people and say, like, oh, well, your last name looks kind of, you know, a little bit interesting, you know, is, you know, are you, you know, Filipino and things like that, like just kind of understanding and having and trying to build that connection when it comes to like culture and identity. I feel like that has been really helpful for me. It also doesn't hurt the fact that I look significantly younger than I actually am. So sometimes they try to hit on me. I don't know why. I don't know why, but I think because I appear significantly younger than I actually am, they're a lot more comfortable talking to me. And I think just going in the room, I always go in the room with a positive attitude. People have told me that I have a quote-unquote trusting face. So I remember that I've had people who I've met for 5 minutes and they've told me like their entire life story. So I think that me being intentional with, you know, I think coming to someone with genuine concern and genuine love, just because, you know, you're a human, I'm a human, and I really do want to make sure that you can be the best version of yourself, I think people can pick that up. And then once you pick that up and I give you advice and things like that, and I also work with them, I think that allowing them to also be an active participant in their care, it really helps. Rather than me dictating what I think that you should do, I always give people options. And with shared decision making, I think that is where I can build that partnership and really build that trust. Sometimes it may take a couple of visits, but for the most part, I think I'm pretty okay with how quickly I've been able to forge relationships with them.
How do you approach the relationships with coaches as far as, I mean, I think it's a lot different now than 40 years ago when the coaches were like, well, now he needs to play. Like, and we were completely inverted in our, as far as what we valued and what was important. But how do you have a constant dialogue with the coaches? Is it something you really only talk to coaches when a problem arises, or is there a consistent touching base, going over things with coaches in general? I'm not looking for any specific ones.
Yeah, so I would say, like, in general, I do like having conversations with coaches. I think that understanding where they're coming from really just helps to bring context. I know that coaches in general, they are under a tremendous amount of pressure. Like, you have to win games. If you don't win games, you could potentially lose your job. Right. And my job is to make sure that whoever is on the field or on the court is going to be their healthiest version that I can help them present. So I think that ultimately our goals are very much the same, but I am very open to their feedback. Like, I know that with past coaches that I've worked with, I ask, like, hey, you know, what are your thoughts on what you think is going on with this kid? Do you think that there's anything else that you think is kind of blocking him or her from being able to make the progress that you need them to make? And I think because I'm open and I welcome open dialogue with the coaches, that that's how you form really good relationships. I also tend to stay in my lane. I will not listen. You're the coach. You're hired for that. I'm the medical doctor. I will stay in my lane. I will say medically, this person is able to do X, Y, and Z. That's what they can do, right? But I will never step on coaches. I have a high respect and a high regard for them.
When you were doing all the, what was it, rotations, when you would try different things?
Yeah, was that medical school, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you do any ER? Did you ever have any work in ER?
I loved ER, yes. It was a madhouse, but it was so much fun. And I did my rotations in, again, I'm from New York, so I did my rotations in Brooklyn, New York. And from gunshot wounds to, you know, having to deal with having the conversations. I remember the most poignant experience that I can remember that I think that really exemplified what an ER physician is like is I remember that we had I believe I was on like my second week of the rotation. It was a pretty busy day. You have your run of the mill kind of stuff, like people coming in for like STD testing or they're concerned about appendicitis, those sorts of things. And then all of a sudden you hear the sirens go off. And it was three ambulances that came in at that point in time. There was one guy who was clearly intoxicated off of what? I have no idea. He had a huge laceration or cut in his skull where it was kind of like splitting open in the bay. So I was in the trauma bay. And the bay next to him was a woman who was pregnant who got into a car. It was a pileup, a multiple car accident. And then there was a pedestrian that was there that was ran over, and it was like all these different things that was going on. And the police comes in too, because obviously it was a crime scene, and trying to manage all these different things at the same time. I feel like it's very much akin to what I'm doing right now. So in the first bay with the guy who's just laughing and joking, again, he must be intoxicated because he doesn't even feel that I'm putting staples in his scalp to bring his scalp back together. I have the pregnant woman who's in the bay right next to him, and she's asking me, you know, is my baby going to survive? Unfortunately, in that case, that was not, you know, it didn't. And then I have the pedestrian who has all these wounds on his legs. You know, we have to try to get things, you know, call ortho because he's going to need surgery. We don't know if we can keep his legs. And so in the ER, it's like so many different things happening all at once. But I would say that in each instance, because the cops were there, they want to get in, they want to get their information, they're trying to do their job. However, it's my responsibility to kind of keep that person's privacy, right? You know, there's this law called HIPAA to make sure that we protect personal information. And my primary job is to make sure that everyone is stable, which means that, you know, kind of get them together and enough. You can evaluate them later. You can question them later, but we need to focus on what's going on right now because this is an emergency. And so I kind of felt torn because I see here this one guy, again, intoxicated, and how he's caused so much carnage, so much damage, and yet I'm protecting him as much as I'm protecting the pregnant woman, as much as I'm protecting, you know, just to make sure that medically they're okay.
The reason I asked that was I would imagine that type of experience where anything in any direction can happen at any moment will really help you as a physician, maybe not so much at prac, but at a game where it might be a knee you have to deal with. And yeah, then 10 minutes later, somebody got their cornea scratched and you have to, like, all these different things that can happen at a moment. So I would imagine having that ER experience is incredibly helpful in this type of situation.
Oh yeah. And it makes it so exciting because first your adrenaline is pumping because, you know, we just scored, and then someone's on the ground and you're just like, oh, okay. And you kind of go through, okay, based off of this mechanism, based off of how this person went down, it's probably going to be A, B, C, D. You know, you let the athletic trainer do their job, do their initial evaluation. If the athletic trainer has it, then great, right? Like, you don't have to do anything. Maybe you see them after the game, right? But if the athletic trainer says, hey, I need you, you know, and then you're walking there, it's like, okay, so this is what I need to do. A, B, C, D. Okay, okay, okay. Let's get it done. And it just kind of becomes automated, if that makes any sense, because like once you're in it, you already know, like your body just kind of goes and just does and you do it without thinking, but it's very much emergency medicine type of stuff. A lot of emergency medicine docs that I've spoken to, when I tell them about like what I've done at the sidelines to kind of help someone get back, they're just like, wait, you did all that with just that? He's like, you're just MacGyvering things? I'm like, yeah, you got to, as long as she or he is able to get back into the game and I can patch him up and it's not going to cause any additional harm or damage, why not? And then we can really evaluate after the game. But if the kid wants to play, I'm not going to stop them from playing as long as they'll be safe and it's not going to cause any harm to himself or herself or anybody or anyone else.
Are you ever stumped with something that comes across? You know, I mean, you have a general idea, but you can't maybe, well, I've never seen it do that before. I've never had someone that's had this condition have this. Like, how often does that happen? And what is that like when you almost have to play detective and kind of go further than, no, because I'm sure like 95% of knee sprains,
yeah,
for the most part, mm-hmm, are all. But I'm sure there's one that comes across that it's not responding like it should. So let's take it to, it must be something else in addition to this. How often do you come across that?
Well, I mean, there are always going to be zebras in medicine. And so there's a quote that says, the more you know, the more you realize what you don't know. And that's what I kind of live for. I live for the surprises. I did have an instance where I could have sworn that this kid had a meniscal injury. For those of you who don't know, a meniscus basically is like the shock absorber of the knee. And the way that he came to me, the way he was talking about his pain and all this other stuff, I really thought that it was his meniscus. So we brought him through the normal, you know, protocol, and he wasn't getting any better. And it turns out it wasn't his meniscus. What it turns out is that he actually had a bony growth. Luckily, it was not cancer, but he had a bony growth, and that was what was actually causing his issues. I've had a couple of times where, you know, you have those rare rheumatological issues. I remember there was an overhead athlete. I don't remember if it was a squash player or tennis player. Nonetheless, this person had back pain for like a really long time. And so we went through the normal protocols and I said, okay, well, because your back pain is really coming from your sacroiliac joint, why don't we try to do a steroid injection into this area? And the athlete had a complete improvement in their symptoms, symptom free. And then by the time we got to 4 weeks, it happened all over again. I'm just like, wait, this doesn't really make any sense. Did some additional digging, and basically I found out that that athlete had ankylosing spondylitis. That is something that's super rare. So I think that by having these zebras, it really keeps me on my toes. It always, when I teach residents, I always tell them, it's really important to make sure that you're thinking about other things that can cause this, that can have the same presentation. So just because someone comes in with like a knee sprain or something like that, you should also be thinking, does this person have any sort of rheumatological issue? Could this really be a cancer? Could this be something else? Because if you have those things in the back of your mind, then you kind of have a better game plan. But honestly, I love playing detective. I think that there's a saying that, you know, doctors love playing detective and nurses are just really great at nurturing. And again, I love that. And it's a great opportunity also just to kind of talk to my colleagues about it, kind of pick their brains. And it's really a collaborative effort. And so by doing so, I think not only am I learning something about a different presentation for the same thing for an athlete, but also forging relationships with other specialties that really help.
How much does the early interest in psychiatry, and you talked about how, mm-hmm, emotionally was just very difficult, but I would imagine there are certain times in your job as a team physician where you have to play that when you have to tell a kid their season's over, or yeah, they have to tell a kid that they're going to be out for 3 months, or
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. You have to be able to deliver that news and understand how that's going to hit and be there for them from the neck up. Like, does that training or the interest in that field, does that help in those moments?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's even a division called like sports psychology. One of my good friends used to play basketball professionally, and that's what he's gone into. It's a lot. There's this thing that's called somatization, which basically means that your brain, if you have any sort of emotional or mental unrest, it can manifest in a physical way. So like abdominal pain could be abdominal pain, but it could also be something else that's kind of going on. And so I think that when it comes to these athletes, I always like to ask about other information about like their social history, like, hey, how are things going at home? How are your classes? You know, because if you're going through finals right now and you're kind of struggling in your class, but you're still trying to keep up with your normal workout routines, then that ankle sprain, which could have been, you know, healed maybe in about a couple of weeks, it's taking you a little bit longer because you have a lot more stress and strain, you know, again, emotionally or mentally. So I like to ask about that ancillary information. I typically get that from the athletic trainers or ask them, you know, directly. And it also, I think me being interested in psychology and psychiatry, I do feel comfortable being able to have these conversations about like their emotional state and kind of provide them some reassurance.
Let's say there's a game that you have to be at. And I asked you earlier out with your schedule and stuff like that. There's a 7 o'clock game. Mm-hmm. Do you have a routine as far as how you get ready for the game? During the game, are you just watching on the side? Do you have things you do during the game? Assuming no one,
yeah,
you have to deal with anyone. Mm-hmm. No one is injured. Post game, are there things you do? Like, kind of, what's your schedule throughout a game?
Yeah. So if a game, it depends if it's not football. So for Olympic sports and I'm covering a game, I usually get there about an hour beforehand. If it's football, then I typically get there maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours before the game actually starts. The reason why I like to go early before tip off is because during the warm-up, starting to practice, that allows me to really just evaluate the athletes, kind of see what their gait is like. If I see that, this athlete is kind of limping a little bit or something like that, that's going to let me know I need to kind of pay attention a little bit more to this guy, right? Additionally, before the games, you know, all the medical staff have a meeting beforehand. During that meeting, it's with EMS. It's with the athletic trainer from, you know, the two opposing teams, the medical doctors from the two opposing teams. And we all get together and we say, you know, what is our EMS protocol just in case an athlete goes down? To clarify, are there any hand signals that you guys use so that we know that for this game, if you make this particular hand signal, we know that that means all hands on deck. We also discussed the closest pharmacy, the closest urgent care, what services that we offer for the athletes, if there's like enough ice or, you know, nearest location to get an x-ray. So that all kind of happens beforehand. During the game, I like to tell my residents that when we're actually at the game, we're kind of watching it, but we're not really. You follow, if the sport has a ball, you tend to follow the ball a little bit because that's where most of the athletes are going to go. But then you kind of go to the back end of the court or the field because you need to make sure that everyone stands up. If someone went down on the floor or something like that, you got to kind of watch that athlete a little bit as they go through for like a couple of plays and make sure that everything is okay. And then during halftime, we tend to go back into the training room. And then you're just there and available just in case if someone needs anything. Hey, this person sprained their wrist during halftime. She was able to kind of get through it, but what should we do here? So I kind of give them an idea of what things that they can do right now to ensure that they can, again, play safely. And then that's also another time for triage. Like if something really bad happened, like someone had a concussion, I do the concussion evaluation there and say, okay, no, this person needs to, you know, cannot play this game. We'll follow up after the game to kind of, you know, see how they're doing. And then after the game, actually, I'm there probably an hour-ish, maybe a little more, depending on what's needed by both teams. So I check in with the athletic trainer or the doc on the other side just to ensure that they're, you know, what other things that they might require during that time. When it comes to football, in my experience, we actually stay after the entire game and we have to check out every single athlete. You know, football is a very high impact sport, high contact sport. So these kids are getting evaluated multiple times. Yeah.
And my final question for you, given everything we've talked about, what is the favorite part of your job?
I would say that kind of seeing the athlete really go back to what they did before. You know, if I had a relationship with an athlete and, you know, we've been working through a shoulder injury and just seeing them come back and, you know, they're just threes are just dropping, right? I love that, right? Because I feel like that part of me is kind of out there. Even though my time has passed in sports, I feel like I can live vicariously through them. You know, again, when I'm helping the athlete become their best version of themselves on the field or on the court, I really love that. And then also, I also love when I see them graduate, right? Because this is why they're doing it, right? Because you're a student first before you're an athlete. So being able to kind of witness from the sidelines their successes, that really makes me happy and proud.
Dr. Shamika Binns, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Dr. Shamika Binns for being our guest this week and coming in studio. She's the head team physician for Temple University Athletics. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.